This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Dan Harwood from Schloss Wackenheim from Germany. How are you, Dan?
You got it. I'm good. Nice to be here.
Excellent. You're the sales manager for the UK and Ireland
for
Schloss Wackenheim. But the product I want to talk about today is the alcohol-free Iceberg range, but also some of your other alcohol-free ranges. And in particular, I want to talk about the process that you guys use. You guys use vacuum distillation. So I want to spend a bit of time on that. But do you want to just give us an overview of who Schloss Wackenheim is?
Yeah, sure. So Schloss Wackenheim are a producer of sparkling wine and alcohol-free products. We're actually one of the biggest producers of sparkling wine in Europe. We're based in Trier in Germany. So it's right on the Mosel Valley. Producing sparkling wine, traditional method, fermented in the bottle, but also tank method as well, larger volume brands. And also we specialize in alcohol-free and de-alkalization. So we have a range of brands on the German market and also in export that are market leaders in alcohol-free.
Okay. You make traditional method German sparkling wine. You don't see a lot of traditional German sparkling wine. Is that Deutsche Sekt?
Deutsche Sekt, yeah. We drink a lot of it in Germany, so we do export some, but yeah, it's big for the German market as well.
And how many bottles of wine, alcohol-free and de-alkalized and normal wine, do you guys sell a year?
We're producing in the region of 250 million bottles.
That's a lot of wine.
We are big, yeah.
That is an awful lot of wine. I've never really heard of Schloss Wackenheim before. Why is that?
So we have Schloss Wackenheim, the brand of sparkling wine, but we also have other brands which are on the market. So one of our bigger ones in Germany is Faber, producing sparkling wine, but also alcohol-free. Lightlive is an alcohol-free market leader in Germany. And in UK, we have Iceberg. So we have all these different brands within the group, not necessarily all labeled as Schloss Wackenheim.
Let's talk a wee bit about the Iceberg wines, which are the ones that you see in the UK. And in particular, the reason I was attracted to you guys is because I was misled. I really liked, of all the alcohol-free wines, your Iceberg Sauvignon Blanc, which is available in a lot of the multiples here at supermarkets. It was the first wine that I thought, do you know what? It actually smells and tastes like a Sauvignon Blanc. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, if I was given that blind, I'd pretty much tell something's wrong with the alcohol level in it because of the hollowness in the mouth, which is just normal for de-alkalized wines. But it actually tasted like a Sauvignon Blanc, and I would have picked it as a Savvy. And normally when I taste alcohol-free wines, it's some sort of generic fruitiness, but you don't have any particular flavors. And I thought that was brilliant, but I found out when you came in earlier that you cheated.
So a few things on that. Firstly, I'll start off by saying our alcohol-free Sauvignon Blanc starts life as a Sauvignon Blanc. So we are starting with the wine and removing the alcohol. During the de-alkalization, you do sometimes lose the very delicate aromas. So all those light citrus notes, all those floral delicate notes sometimes get lost. Mm. So when we're making Iceberg Sauvignon Blanc, there is the addition at the end of some natural aromas. And that is to balance what has been lost in the process. It's part of the production for Iceberg. When we're looking at where Iceberg sits on a shelf, its price point, all of that, it's part of that. And there are a lot of brands that also add natural aromas as well. When we are doing that, however, we do benchmark against the competitors in the space, but also against alcohol wines. So when we're looking at Iceberg Sauvignon Blanc, we're tasting Chilean Sauvignon, we're tasting South of France, we're tasting New Zealand to see what consumers in the UK expect from Sauvignon. And then we go from there.
And I suppose the thing about it is because technically de-alkalized wine or alcohol-free wine or whatever you want to call it, it's not technically and certainly not legally wine. You can't add flavors to wine and call it wine, well, apart from oak and things like that usually. So because it's not a wine beverage per se, you can add flavors to it.
Yeah, you can adjust at the end, whether it's through flavors or whether it's through more grape must. We as a alcohol-free wine, we're less than 0.05%. And that is the threshold for alcohol-free versus de-alkalized. In fact, on the label, we mark a 0.0. For us, that's a clearer message of saying there's no alcohol in here.
Mm, mm. Do you get pushback, just out of curiosity, from, and I'm thinking Muslims here, because of their, they don't tend to want to drink alcohol products. Because we, when we run tastings, we often have one or two people who are non-drinkers for whatever reason. Sometimes it's religion, sometimes it's pregnancy, sometimes it's, they just don't want to drink, but they want to participate in a corporate environment or a corporate event. So we provide them alcohol-free wines. But I'm always worried about the sort of 0.5% ones, you know, the low alcohol options, and whether that is a real problem for some people. Do you find it when you're dealing with people that people who might not drink alcohol because of religious observance, do they have an issue with it?
I'm no expert in the Muslim community and the approach of alcohol, but I will say in what we've learned over the past is it does sometimes depend on the orthodoxy of the individual. So for some, it's okay because the level that we're at is 0.05 and below. There's more in a banana, orange juice, sourdough bread, all of those things. However, some view it as saying it's had alcohol because we start with a wine, then remove it. So for some, it's a no because it's had the alcohol in. And for some, it's okay because it's at a level which is not included.
I was looking at that. You're right about the orange juice and the banana. Do you know what one of the biggest offenders for high alcohol is? American hamburger buns.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
1% alcohol.
Yeah, in bread, yeah.
Believe it.
Absolutely. When it comes to others, with us as being 0.0, if it's driving, if it's pregnancy, if it's those kind of health reasons or legal reasons, it's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
You can have as much as you want.
Yeah. Although I had some kombucha the other day that was quite low. It was less, about 1% or less. And I drank like 3 or 4 glasses of the stuff. And I was driving home and I was going, do you know what? I feel like there's just a little bit of alcohol. Not enough to impair my driving, but enough to be aware that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a big difference between 1%, 0.5% and 0.05.
Yeah.
And I think some as consumers, and it's part of the messaging, is understanding it's not the same thing. And people will see or not understand the difference between 0.5 and 0.05. Which again goes back to why we say 0.0, because it's just easier. It's just saying there's nothing.
Okay. And in terms of the products you sell, you've Iceberg. Let's just talk about what you've got, because Iceberg's available in the UK anyway, in Waitrose, Tesco's, Co-op, Morrison's, Ocado, even on Amazon. And we've got a lot of American listeners. Is it exported to America?
Currently to North America, not at the moment. It is to South America. It is into Africa. It is to Australasia. And across Europe as well, Scandinavia, Netherlands, and Ireland. Yeah, North America, not quite yet, but not we'll quite. Get there.
You'll get there. Okay. So let's talk about the range, because you've got two levels, haven't you?
Yeah. So something that we've recently introduced to the Iceberg brand family is Iceberg Selection, which is our new premium addition to the range. And we've done this in a response as consumers, as wine drinkers, start to build alcohol-free into their repertoire more and more. It's moving away from, oh, I have to have alcohol-free, to I choose to, and it is becoming a much more sought after category. And so what we've done is introduced a higher quality premium alcohol-free brand within Iceberg, which doesn't have the compromises. So we talked about flavors earlier in Iceberg Selection. There is no additional flavors. All you get is the wine without the alcohol.
I tried, just before we came on air, I tried your premium Pinot Noir, and the nose was really good.
Yeah.
It's a solid, I don't know if I'd get it blind as a Pinot Noir, but it's, if someone said it's a Pinot Noir, I'd go, yep, that smells like a Pinot Noir. Do you know what I mean? It's not quite as red fruity as I'd expect, but it has that sort of Pinot Noir feeling to it.
Yeah. When we were looking at the reds in selection, it was really, what varieties do we go for? And for me, Pinot Noir was a clear choice because it's a premium variety. People associate it with premium regions. But also through de-alkalization, it's, with reds, it's sometimes tricky to get the body, to get the intensity of flavor and the color. And so with a Pinot Noir, which is naturally lighter in body, it lends itself a little bit more. So yeah, I'm super happy with the Pinot Noir.
There's not much tannins in that. Is that a function of the de-alkalization process, or is it just the style you're going for?
It's a bit of both, really. It's trying to avoid being super tannic, because you don't have the alcohol to bring that extra dimension in. you need to be careful about the balance, but also lower tannins in the wine that we've de-alkalized as well. What we do have in the Pinot Noir is a little bit of oak to add complexity, to add...
Yeah, I was thinking it might have oak, but I thought, nah, it can't have.
We do add a little bit at the end. It's using chips. We can't put an alcohol-free in barrels and things like that. It doesn't work.
Well, it's
Without the alcohol, it's not stable enough. We need to be careful with it once we've de-alkalized.
But you could make it with oak and then de-alkalize it afterwards, but that's expensive, I suppose.
Well, the challenge is going back to what I said before. When you lose the delicate aromas through de-alkalization, what you'll end up with is heavy oak at the end. So you need to be careful that the wine that goes in needs to be pretty fruity, pretty expressive, and not too complex.
Well, let's talk about the process you guys use. You use a method called vacuum distillation.
Yeah.
Now, I've talked to Torres. I actually think it was the younger Miguel Torres a long time ago, about 10 years ago, and they use spinning cone, or they did at that stage.
Yeah.
Use spinning cane. So I'm not going to talk about that too much. But do you want to just describe what vacuum distillation is and why you think it's suitable for de-alkalizing wines?
Yeah, absolutely. So we use vacuum distillation. We have in Trier, on the Mosel in Germany, we have our own custom-built 7-meter-high glass still. So it's a mix of glass and Teflon that's there. It's under a vacuum, which means that when we gently warm the wine up, we only need to get to about 32 degrees C and the alcohol will start to evaporate.
And that's because one of the things about whether something evaporates is a mixture of temperature and pressure.
Exactly. If you were distilling to produce a vodka, gin, whiskey or whatever, you're at much higher temperatures because it's in natural atmospheric pressure, put it in a vacuum.
I think the classic one is people say that you can climb to the top of Mount Everest and water boils at a much lower temperature.
Yeah, same concept, yeah. But what that means for us is that lower temperature, we're not cooking the wine, we're just gently heating it. And you can touch this still. It's perfectly warm to the touch, but not too hot. And it's all made of glass, so it's all pipes going everywhere, and you can see the alcohol go one way and condense and then trickle away, and the wine come in another. It's very Willy Wonka. It's got all these glass tubes going everywhere, three stories high.
Yeah. Why use glass? Because the reason copper stills are very popular is because of sulfur in the underlying product. And when you concentrate that in a still, you get really concentrated sulfur, so you get off flavors. Whereas the copper in the still reacts with the sulfur and effectively removes it. So how do you make sure that you don't get high concentrations of sulfur coming through your still?
Being incredibly careful in a sterile environment and making sure that the wine that's going in at the beginning is super clean and stable and that everything is sterile through and through, and then at the end put through a filter to make sure, again, there's no microbial risk at the end. So it's really just being really, really careful. And a few years ago, we introduced a new bottling line, which in the filling part of the bottling line, again, is even more sterile to make sure it's safe.
I suppose you've got to be pretty careful with microbial stability, yeah, because let's face it, there's two things that really keep wine stable, and that's alcohol and acidity.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have some acidity, you've got alcohol, no alcohol, and then a lot of your product, you seem to be adding must, so you're adding a sweetening component to it as well, which means that you've got some acidity and some sweetening component and no alcohol. That must be, it's like the dreaded low alcohol white Zinfandel where, you know, it's just sweet and everything wants to ferment and go in there and do its thing. So is there lots of dosing of sulfur dioxide afterwards as well, or what are you doing?
There is an addition of sulfur dioxide. It's not significantly more than other commercial wines at that level. A Pinot Grigio at £5 that might be off dry and have a little bit of sweetness. It's not really different to those, but there is the addition of sulfur. And yes, we get asked that the age-old question, does it contain sulfites? Yes, it does, and it always will. Until we invent a new way of keeping the wine stable, that is the best option we've got.
And do you do micro-filtering of the wine as well?
Yeah, it goes through a pretty small filter, I think a 0.45 micron filter to make sure it's as stable as it can be.
No yeast and bacteria. Can you take out bacteria at that level?
Yeah.
You can?
Yeah. so it's stable. We also have the option sometimes of using Velcorin as well. Velcorin, it's a brand name of a stabilizing agent, which can even more stabilize the wine. We use it more for if we've got wine cocktails that have got fruit particles in, which we also produce, it needs to be stable.
Okay, so let's get back to the distillation. You're using a low temperature, low pressure to get the alcohol to boil off.
Mm-hmm.
You said you lose flavor as well. Do you re-filter that out, the flavor from the alcohol, and reintroduce the flavor, or is it purely anything that comes off during that distillation process is lost?
Generally, yes. So when the alcohol is going away, which is around 300 litres of alcohol a day, that's gone. That's collected separately. It's used for different things. What we're left with is then what we bottle with. If it depends on the level, if it's a more entry-level alcohol-free, a little bit of adjustment. If it's our premium alcohol-free, no adjustment, because the wine is good enough to carry the flavour through.
Okay, the reason I ask that is I think, and I haven't listened to the podcast recently, but when I was talking about looking at Spinning Cone, I think they separated, they got the wine into two chunks with the alcohol in one chunk, and then they reprocessed the alcohol and then reintroduced the components that had been pulled out in the first instance back into the wine. You don't do that process.
What we're doing is a continuous process. So if you wanted, we could run the still 24 hours a day. It's a continuous still.
Oh, it is a continuous still, is it? Yeah.
So if we wanted, it could just keep going. So it's running through, and what comes out is out. We're not putting it back in to do it again. For us, using vacuum distillation over Spinning Cone, two reasons. One's the continuous efficiency of it. But secondly, we are getting to a much lower ABV of alcohol. We're getting below, 0.03, 0.02. That's really tricky to do in a Spinning Cone and still get flavor out of it. For us, this is the best way to get to label 0.0% and still have character in the wine.
Is there anything that you lose? Apart from alcohol, is things like tannins, color, anthocyanins, any of that sort of stuff? Is that an issue?
You lose a bit of color. So when we're producing red wines, it's sometimes tricky to make sure you get depth of color, depth of body out the alcohol-free wine at the end. So we produce a Cabernet Sauvignon in our core range and will not look as deep as a Kunawara Cab Sav. It just will not happen.
Yeah.
In the premium range, we have a Pinot Noir. And for me, it really is a great choice of alcohol, of variety for de-alkalization, because Pinot Noir, it's lighter color, it's light bodied, it doesn't have as much tannin. And therefore, after the de-alkalization, it still retains a lot of what you expect a Pinot Noir to be.
Yeah. I looked at your Iceberg Sauvignon Blanc, and it's got 29,000 calories per 125 mil. Some of the premium range has significantly lower calories.
Mm.
What's going on there?
So in the premium range, because we're using a better quality wine, at the end you get a better quality product. We don't have to have as much grape must to balance the wine, to rebalance, to carry the fruit. It's doing a lot of the work for us. So our premium wines, in terms of grams per litre, 30 to 40. So that's like 23 kilocalories. In our core range, it's a little bit higher, but actually over the past 6 months, we've been working to bring that down. So you'll start to see on shelf, those calorie counts coming down and that residual sugar coming down as we constantly improve and benchmark and test in the lab about different palates. And in fact, when with Sauvignon Blanc is an interesting one. When we're benchmarking in the lab, I'm from the UK and I'll go over to Germany and sit in a room with all the Germans. And when we're talking residual sugar, they have a much higher tolerance of residual sugar in wine in Germany. So I'm constantly battling, say, lower, 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 less sugar. And yeah, we find somewhere in the middle. But yeah, it's always a challenge.
One of the things with these wines is they are always, in my opinion, quite hollow in the mouth. They lack that mouth width.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beer industry, when they're making low alcohol beers, they do sometimes add other things like lactose beers and all sorts of stuff that help build mouth texture. Obviously, because this technically isn't wine, you could add other ingredients to it to give mouthfeel, glycerine or something like that, to help build that. Have you guys looked at that? Because that to me is the kicker. If you can get a decent mouthfeel, and you're starting to get decent aromas now.
Yeah.
You're home and hosed. At the moment, we're still only got half the product.
Yeah. It absolutely is stuff we look at and have ongoing trials in at the moment back at base. So we are constantly looking. We know that the challenges against it. We know it's not quite the same. And with current technology, it will not be the same as a wine with alcohol. It just won't. Consumers know that. They understand it's not the same thing. But we are constantly working to say, get as close as we can. And yeah, things with different ways to get body without sweetness, without the use of grape must is number one at the moment.
Is there anything that you've looked at that you think might be a good option?
Probably not things that we can announce yet, but we are always working on it. Yeah.
Okay. Things you can't announce.
I don't know whether I should say that, so I won't say it.
And one of the things that was in the news this week, according to the end of June, so it's not probably going to go out for a few more months, but there was an article this week saying that, you know, there's a lot of interest in online. People are searching for low and no alcohol products. However, the searches don't equate through to sales. You know, people do a certain amount of searching for alcohol and the sales are significantly higher, whereas they do a lot of searching for non and low alcohol wines and the sales don't stack up. So how have you guys found sales good? And do you see a sort of nervousness with the consumer maybe looking but not buying?
There is one barrier still there about recruiting new customers into alcohol free. And quite often it's about not thinking, will I like it? Am I going to buy this bottle and I'm going to pour it down the drain because I don't like it? And so what we need to do as a brand and one of the category driving brands is to help consumers in that. So we do it in a few ways. We do it with a lot of sampling at sporting events, a lot of sampling at things like a baby show, different consumer events, so people can taste it and see.
Baby show is quite good, isn't it?
Baby show is great for us. Yeah. It's 3 days of people really enjoying having a glass of wine again. But also we were recently at Balance Festival, that's out in Shoreditch, and which is a health and wellbeing festival with a much younger consumer. And yeah, again, it's people who are watching their fitness and are looking for that way to enjoy a glass of wine without the alcohol, without the calories, all those things that go with it. Other ways that we can help the consumer is, as Iceberg, we're pretty affordable alcohol-free wine. So we offer that entry into the category to say, you know, it's less than £4, you know, try it once. And then we also look at different formats. So our next project is to look at cans and put an alcohol-free sparkling wine into a can. And again, putting it in a 200ml can helps people to see, okay, it's a single serve. If I don't like it, it's not the end of the world.
One thing about Iceberg, which I kind of like, is that your pricing seems sensible. Like your Iceberg Sauvignon Blanc, I looked online at the moment, it's £3.25 in some places. The Fizz was £4.10. Whereas a lot of these alcohol-free products, they're priced about the same as the alcohol product, except for they're not paying a big wad of cash in duty. So all of a sudden, these guys are raking it in. They must be absolutely stealing it.
It's really expensive to make. It's very energy costly, I would say, to run our still. It's really expensive to do it. And in an energy crisis, it's even more challenging. So yes, you're not paying duty, you're taking that away. But to produce an alcohol-free, we're doing everything up to the wine and then going further. We're then taking the alcohol back out again. So we're doing all this extra work. So yeah, it's not cheap to make at all. But what we do offer is Iceberg, have been there the longest, and we are big. We are producing or selling on the UK market around 2 million bottles every year. We have the opportunity to be that affordable, alcohol-free.
And tell me, the alcohol, what do you do with it afterwards?
A range of stuff. We've used it before in other products, like a pre-mixed gin and tonic. We've used it to make a brandy before and aged some in barrels, which came out really nicely. It can be sold as industrial alcohol. During the pandemic, it could be hand sanitizer. There are there's always ways for alcohol to be used.
Yeah. What does it come out at? What percentage?
I'd have to check. It's not rectified, so we're not talking 95, 96. It's somewhere in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. as I say, we recorded this in June for release, probably September, possibly October. And as we get closer to Christmas, one of the products people sometimes get into is mulled wine. You kindly dropped off a bottle of your alcohol-free mulled vat. Well, you're like us. You dropped off half a bottle of various samples that you've been to London with. Yeah. I mean, we're the last stop, so we get the residuals.
You get to keep it.
You get to keep it, yeah. But you did a mulled wine. What's going on there?
Yeah, so it's something that we launched last year as Iceberg Mulled, which is a 0.0% mulled wine alternative. So it's an alcohol-free wine with the addition of all the spices and citrus that you expect from a mulled. Again, it adds to the choice for consumers. We have something for everyone. And there will be plenty of opportunities during the season where people are driving or they're just generally not drinking anyway, but want to get in the spirit and want to enjoy a mulled wine just as much as everyone else. We've done all the hard work, so you don't need to take a bottle of alcohol-free wine and then mull it at home and spend hours over the stove. Done it for you. It's ready to warm up and go. So that'll be ready on shelf for Christmas.
All right, mate. Thanks very much, Dan.
Thank you.
Cheers, bud.
Cheers.